Now, here's Bill Resnick with Marco Black to talk about housing. Bill.
Hi, Margo Black. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Margo Black teaches math at Lewis and Clark College. She's a dedicated activist, co-founded the organization Portland Tenants United. It grew rapidly, attracting people and support from all over the city. In fact, becoming a force in the city, challenging abusive landlords and picketing them, embarrassing them, forcing them to act within the law, also changing the laws, and in fact getting action from the city, actions that landlords strongly oppose. Margo, tell us about Tenants United, why it got organized, its successes, its recent hearing before the city council, and then we'll begin discussing the housing crisis in general and a lot that has to be done. First, though, tell us about Tenants United.
Sure. We started Portland Tenants United in the summer of 2015, and that was after about a year of growing conversations, really in various venues on social media and sort of starting to trickle out into the real world where, you know, due to the recession in 2008 and a mass exodus from homeownership into rentership combined with Portland's population growing, combined with the building stopping, there were more renters than there were houses, and the rents just started shooting up. You started seeing building-wide no-cause evictions. People were being forced out of their homes and then realizing that, you know, their security deposits were being stolen. And really, it was just kind of this growing chorus of folks who felt really powerless. You know, were told to just move if they didn't like it or find a city they could afford when they, you know, lived here their whole lives and helped make Portland what it was.
And a whole lot of homelessness.
And then the homelessness was just burgeoning. And, you know, renters were feeling really alienated and isolated, really internalizing it, like it's their fault for having not bought a house or worked harder or tried harder. And we just started to talk about it and realize that we're not alone and it's not natural. It doesn't make any sense. We're paying more than a mortgage and we have zero security. And so we came together feeling like, you know, hearing from our policymakers that they either didn't think it was an issue or that their hands were tied, and realized this, you know, there was a lot of rage. So it could really use an infusion of direct action and unapologetic advocacy on a bunch of different planks because, you know, together we're stronger and we can leverage our power of rent and not pay it if enough of us come together and sort of the union model, the labor strike becomes the rent strike because they can't evict us all. So that's how the union started in 2015. As you said, it's grown fast.
And you've had a lot of success, although there's a lot, much, much more that has to be done. But first, tell us about the success and your recent struggles.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think our biggest victory is really just raising awareness and shifting consciousness on this. We've made tenants' rights an issue. Affordable housing is something that has policymakers and wonks have talked about forever with, you know, varying degrees of success. But affordable housing means creating revenue streams to pay nonprofit developers or incentivize for-profit developers to, you know, build subsidized housing, which is great, but it's very different than the power imbalance between tenant and landlord that affects everybody who can't get into subsidized housing. So we've, you know,
it also doesn't build much. It doesn't build much housing either,
well, right,
in comparison
exactly,
to
right.
the.
Right. And it challenges the entrenched power of land ownership. So nobody wanted to talk about it. So we've got people talking about that. We've got the mayor talking about it when he was a candidate and we worked with him to get him to put out a tenants' bill of rights. At the legislature, they actually had lifting the ban on local rent control, got through the House and almost through the Senate when, you know, the year before I was told by lobbyists, down in Salem, that it'll be 20 years before anybody even says the word rent control out loud in Salem. And it took a year until we almost had it, or at least we almost had the ability to enact
except
it.
Except for the betrayal of one Democratic representative, you would have had it.
Yeah, Senator Rod Monroe took $10,000 from the landlord lobby and said he wasn't going to vote on the bill. Senator Betsy Johnson, who's also a Democrat, also refused. We felt like Rod's treachery was much worse because he lives in like a pressure cooker of the next wave of gentrification out in East Portland. He's a landlord himself of over 50 units in a small apartment building. And we just, his no vote was just unjustifiable. And not to give Betsy Johnson any latitude there at all, but she's in a more rural area where she probably hasn't, you know, she doesn't have a dense pockets of apartments. So I think our biggest, you know, success, we've gotten landlords to pay attention to us. They've negotiated the non-negotiable leases as, you know, tenants have organized in their buildings. But we successfully unseated incumbent City Councilman Steve Novick and replaced him with tenants' rights champion Commissioner Udaly, Chloe Udaly. And barely a month after taking office, she passed Portland's historic relocation ordinance, relocation assistance, which says that if your landlord gives you a no-cause eviction or raises your rent by more than 10% in 1 year, and that is not a rent increase that you can afford, that you can absorb, in either of those cases, they have to pay your relocation costs or something towards that. So it goes from $2,900 for a studio to $4,500 for a three-bedroom or bigger. And so the landlord just has to write that check, and then you actually have money for the security deposit, for, you know, the double rent, for application fees, for packing and moving. And it was a unanimous vote. It was effective immediately, and it was even retroactive to any notice in effect. So it really shook the landlords to their core and said, all right, the game has changed, and we actually have power. And we're not going to go away. And the city felt that, the landlords felt that, and the state felt that, and that's been a real big deal.
You've got a movement going here. There are movements across the country. They've had some successes, but the housing crisis is going to continue and get worse unless some very basic things are done. Why don't you talk about the housing crisis? How is it that so many people are now paying 50% of their income or even more and go hungry at the end of the month just to make the rent payment?
Well, you know, you're going to hear a lot about how we have a supply problem. You're going to hear a lot about how wages haven't kept up with rent, so we need higher wages. And I think all of that is smoke and mirrors. You know, we don't have a housing supply problem. We have an affordable housing supply problem. We have a housing used for homes supply problem. I mean, the fact of the matter is that housing...
housing used for investment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, housing used to be for people to live in and to build their community, to get to know their neighbors. You know, where I grew up, you know, most of the kids I went to school with were born and raised in those homes and then, you know, might inherit them from their parents. And we didn't see housing as, you know, a high return investment vehicle. And we really saw them as a place to, you know, make memories and create rituals and dig into the community. And even in rental housing, I mean, even, you know, there are plenty of certainly big cities, but you don't even have to be in a big city where people would live in their apartments for 20, 30 years. And sure, some people would come and go, but a lot of folks would stay and build community there. But where in the ownership model now, it has become a commodity. It's become a way to make money. It's no longer a place, you know, you don't think about buying a house. Even if you are going to move into the house, you may think about the school district and the parks and libraries, but really what you're thinking about is, when I sell this in 5 years, how much money am I going to make? I mean, you know, I have an embarrassing amount of money in student loans. And I've been told by people, well, you know, the way to pay off your student loans is to buy a house, borrow against the equity. That should not be the way that we are paying for our kids' education. It should not be what we depend upon in order to retire. Retire in your home because you don't have a mortgage to pay anymore, sure, but your home and your rental properties as your retirement account, you know, there's no reason why we need to be passing off the burden of our lack of a social safety net onto renters to now fund our landlords' kids' college education and fund our landlords' retirement account. I don't begrudge them for wanting to put their kids in college.
Yeah, and the big investment funds that are buying more and more and more property.
Yeah, PERS.
And
PERS
homes.
Is a huge landlord.
Yeah, there's that. Well, yeah, and there are also some investment funds that have bought everything.
Yeah, after they
very discounted after the foreclosures, who now own thousands of homes all over the country and charge as much as they can, foreclose, and then do more of it.
They have sophisticated computer models that say exactly what they can charge for rent, and they've figured out how to extract every possible fee and fine and pass every cost off onto the tenant. And these are the same people who created the foreclosure crisis, cleared everyone out of their homes, destroyed the global economy, then bought those homes back up and are renting them to us at twice what we should be paying, and calling it, market value. Like, no one questions that. What is creating the market value when you are talking about something that should be a utility?
And that everybody needs. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Margot Black, who is one of the co-founders, still an activist, very active in Portland Tenants United. We were talking about the larger picture. There's a lot of things that can be done to protect tenants, but there are so many things that are vitally important to do that have to be done by the federal government and to some extent the states. For example, public housing. The rise of conservatism has meant that public housing has been cut enormously, and really very little is now being built, and some of it's being sold off, and some of them is just being destroyed. The land sold off to developers for luxury apartments, of course, that they then sell to investment funds.
Which largely sit vacant.
And stay vacant. There's many things, though, that can be done. One of them, of course, has to be a federal and state commitment to, in fact, extract some of the money from the rich, like a tax on luxury apartments, a tax on vacant high-rises, on vacant land, to pay for just a wide variety of things.
Public housing,
clear horrible land vacant and build what now we can imagine is really wonderful public housing designs and environmentally sustainable designs. It seems to me that a big part of the housing crisis is it's not going to be solved until we, in fact, build that kind of national movement that changes the priorities of the country.
Yeah, and I mean, we really have to look at our values underlying that policy. Like, it has to come back to what kind of community do people want to live in, and not, like, how do we make the most money off of this land later? And I think when we ask the question and we design housing and make housing policy around people living and working and playing and praying in their community, then we have green space and we have walkable neighborhoods and we have housing that everybody can afford no matter where they are on the income spectrum. And once you know that you get to live there and create community and get to know your neighbors, then you do that and you start to care more about it and steward it better. And we can really shift the way that cities and suburbs and the culture there and really get to a healthier place in terms of sustainability, in terms of everything that makes a healthy community healthy. We have to build homes for people to live in and not to make money from.
Yeah, and reconstruct our cities.
Yeah.
And some cities have very different challenges than others. Portland has its challenges. Detroit, Cleveland, Milwaukee, lots of cities, and many now decaying inner suburbs, they have their problems. And in fact, that there's a rehabilitation requirements, really investing in those cities and bringing jobs there.
Yeah.
People are flooding to Portland because it's been a good job market for one reason.
Right.
And then they pay huge rents, and some of these single people can do that, especially if they triple up or more.
You know, though, you would be surprised how many people are living paycheck to paycheck, even in higher income brackets,
because
of the housing. And, nobody wants to feel sorry for somebody making $200,000 a year. But when you're paying $5,000 a month in rent, and then you're not getting your – and that's more Bay Area stuff, but you're not getting your mortgage interest deduction, which is our biggest housing subsidy – in the country.
And it goes to the rich.
And, you know, you even get a mortgage interest deduction for a second home. It is unconscionable that we are incentivizing people having two homes when so many people don't even have one.
Yeah, or multiple homes that they buy as investment vehicles
and
rent. Yeah.
And, the game is so rigged tax-wise for rental properties.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
All that has to change. Well, Margot, We've done it today.
Done it.
How do people get in touch with Tenants United?
Well, the best way to find us is our website, which really just goes to our Facebook page right now, but you can see it even if you don't have Facebook, and that's PDXTU, so T as in tenant, U as in United, pdxtu.org. You can also email us at info@pdxtu.org. Put December 6th on the calendar for when we go back to City Hall and demand a permanent relocation policy and close the single rental exemption that is leaving huge swaths of tenants unprotected without any justification.
Yeah, and another thing Tenants United does is protect tenants in a variety of ways. For those who need help, you can talk to Tenants United. Margo Black, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you so much for having me on. Have a great morning.
You too.
Bye-bye.
That's a song called The Unpredictable Landlord by Bedhead. In case you couldn't make out the lyrics, they go like this. No words more misused than absurd, but no words more absurd than misused. So fix this place. The ceiling's leaking from everywhere. Bricks and beams are falling from the sky, and no one deserves to live here.